You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to be talking Detective Comics number 980, Justice League No Justice number 1, The Flash number 46, Batman White Knight number 8, Supergirl season 3 episode 17, Trinity, Flash season 4 episode 21, Harry and the Harrisons, and Arrow season 6 episode 22, The Ties That Bind. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. And we got quite a bit of DC news for tonight, so let's try to get through this. First up, DC Comics is calling its fresh start a creative refresh.
I mean, when that really, honestly, if you're paying attention to the news like we are, it's not really surprising because we basically have seen all of this already. Like, Snyder's on Justice League now. Bendis is taking over the Superman line. Detective Comics is getting a new creative team. Green Lantern is getting a new creative team. When I saw the news, it's like, yep, okay. Exactly in line with what you guys are doing, so that works for me. I think it's good. I think it's a good idea to mix it up because, I mean, with the exception of the solo Superman title, most of those were struggling titles to a certain extent. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, some of them were. So it's good to change it up. And I know I'm happy about some of them, like Detective Comics. It needed a creative team change, and so did Green Lanterns, or Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns.
Somebody who actually appreciates the Bat Family.
Yes. So, yeah. Have you heard the rumor about who's going to be on Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns? Well, I don't know if they're going to be keeping that title or if they're changing it.
Yes. Grant Morrison's supposed to be writing it.
Yes. So I'm intrigued to see what he's going to do with it.
I am very intrigued by that. I think that could be kind of cool. There was also some rumors that they were going to potentially reboot a couple of the characters, that they were going to basically undo Batman's marriage and undo Superman's kid. Both of those I think would be just disastrous. And I think it was met with almost universal negative reaction, especially to Batman's wedding. I mean, it hasn't even happened yet. But Jim Lee came out and basically said that's not true. And whether he's telling the truth or not, but we don't know. But I assume that he is, just because it doesn't make sense. The only way it makes sense is if you're intentionally trying to alienate your entire fan base.
Yeah, and we just came back with these new status quos in the last 2 years with Rebirth. So it would be silly to change them already.
Hard reboot of Batman and Superman would it legitimately be a great way to lose a huge chunk of readers. Obviously, Batman is always going to sell comics, but like somebody like myself, I would have to probably take a break from DC for a little bit buying comics, because I'd be like, what's the point? Like, why am I investing myself in these stories if you're just gonna not be able to commit to them for more than a year? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I don't think I would be the only one. So I mean, it would be both a terrible creative decision and a terrible business decision. It would be a great way to tank your numbers, and they honestly can't afford to do that. So I sincerely hope they don't do that.
Yeah, me too. All right, next up for DC News. This is another rumor. The Flash solo movie is scrapping the Flashpoint story. I haven't heard anything confirmed yet. It's just rumors.
I can believe this one. We've not heard anything concrete. The only concrete things we've gotten from The Flash are that they've parted ways with like three different directors. That's the only thing for sure that we've known with the movie. So honestly, anything else I hear, I don't like. Sure, they were going to do a Flashpoint movie, and what else did we hear about it? Nothing. So if you're going to tell me now that they're not doing a Flashpoint movie, fine. What did we lose? Nothing. Like, nothing ever got off the ground with that anyway. It's just like me saying that there's going to be a Booster Gold Green Lantern team up movie. it's not going to happen. So when they tell me it's not going to happen, I'm not going to be that upset about it. So I don't know. That's just my perspective on it. Like, yes, if it's true, that's disappointing. But also, it's not that bad because it was never like it was literally made any progress whatsoever.
I'm at the point now where I don't really care about the DC movies. I guess once they get their act together and start, you know, doing some stuff, I'd care more about them. But right at this point, I don't really care. I'm going to go see them when they come out. But as far as them having a DC cinematic universe, I could care less.
Think about what a shame that is. Like, we are a DC podcast. Like, we're dedicated to DC stuff, and they can't, like, even we're at a point where it's just like, whatever. Like, if you put out a movie, I'm going to go see it. But until then, like, call me back when you actually have something to show me. I mean, that's what I feel like we're both at. Like, I won't believe any DC rumor until they are actually filming the movie. That's where I'm at. Like, and even then, I won't really care until I see any, like, some sort of footage or, you know, some sort of media stuff. Because otherwise, I just don't. It's whatever. Like, you're throwing too many things out on the wall and not doing anything with them. So, like, you can only cry wolf so many times before we just start ignoring it.
Yeah. No, one thing we're guaranteed from them is Wonder Woman 2's coming out.
We've got Aquaman, for sure. That's the next movie we're
going to have. Aquaman's coming out because they're done filming it. It's coming out later this year.
I am excited for that. Especially because it's actually done. It's like, we know for sure we are definitely getting an Aquaman movie.
I'm excited about it too. And I got a Justice League poster, or not poster, I got a Justice League calendar at work, and this month's Justice League character is Aquaman. So I got a picture of Jason Momoa up there. It looks pretty awesome.
We know for sure we're getting Shazam, which I am also very excited for. Again, because we know for sure, because they just finished filming just like a couple days ago. And we're for sure getting Wonder Woman 2. Like, those three movies, yeah, I am very excited for them because I know I am definitely going to see those movies. Like, I know for sure that they're being made. All of the other stuff that they've announced or pseudo-announced, like, I don't care until that movie is legitimately getting made.
Yep, I agree with you. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Lucifer has been canceled after 3 seasons.
I know you haven't seen this show, I don't think, right?
No, I have not.
I was very disappointed when I saw it, just because I really enjoy the show. I will never claim that it is fantastic television, but it is extremely watchable television. I've said this before on the podcast, but the dude that plays Lucifer is just, he's so good. He is so good in that role. And that alone is enough for me to watch the show. I'm hoping there's a slim, slim chance that maybe somebody else picks them up, potentially even DC Universe. So that would be cool. I would love if they picked it up. Unlikely, though, so that would, I will be enjoying its season finale, but yeah, it's been a good run.
Now, DC Universe would probably be a good home for it.
I think it would actually be a really smart move for DC Universe also. I'm biased, obviously, because I like the show, but that's an already made show that is, like, that's a known property and a known fan base that you can just install. All these other ones, like Young Justice is obviously going to be a hit, of course, but a lot of these other ones you don't kind of know. And you kind of take, so there's a little bit of a gamble right now with the opening of this. Of course, they've got old shows to fall back on, but I think it would be smart because it would be a known safe property that you're inserting into your initial lineup.
I agree with you. And if Constantine hadn't gone to Legends, that would be another good one that they could have picked back up.
Yeah.
So. All right, well, talking about DC Universe, they announced a Doom Patrol series, and this is what I think is funny. They're calling it a spinoff, the live-action Teen Titans show. It hasn't even come out yet, and they're trying to spin a show off of it.
Well, because we talked about it. They're supposed to pop up on the Titans show, correct?
Yeah.
So I remember that. So honestly, when I saw that news, like, didn't we already know this? And I didn't remember at first that they were supposed to be on a different show. So to be frank with you, when I saw that, I was just like, oh, I thought we knew that already, even though we didn't. So it could be interesting. I do think it'll be a little odd just because Doom Patrol is such a metafictional thing that is, like, very heavy into, like, you know, interacting with comics, like, as a medium. I think there's potentially something really cool you could do with that with TV, but we'll see. I am very, very curious to see what they do with that, because it would definitely not be your standard straightforward superhero show.
Right. And I don't think something like that would make it on mainstream TV, so putting it in the DC Universe streaming service is probably a perfect home for it. All right, and in other DC news, Gotham's been renewed for a fifth and final season. And they've already announced that the Gotham season finale will feature Bruce Wayne becoming Batman.
I watched the first half of this season, and then I fell behind, and then like the episodes fell off of Hulu, and so then I just it just went away for me. So I'm excited to catch up once the season's over, to catch the back half of the season. It's Gotham. I've described my feelings about the show before. It is what it is. It can be really entertaining. It can be really silly sometimes. It's rarely great, but it's rarely terrible too. So, you know, I'm glad they got one final season. I was expecting Gotham potentially to be at more risk than Lucifer, just because I assumed that Gotham cost more to make than Lucifer did.
And I'm probably two seasons behind on. I watched season one and two and part of three, and then I just got behind, you know, trying to keep up with the other CW shows and doing our podcast, editing for it. So kind of fell behind, but I'm planning on catching up on Gotham this summer.
Gotham's a tough one, because like, I'd be hard pressed. Like, if somebody asked me, should I watch Gotham? I'm not sure that I would say yes, but at the same time, like, if somebody, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody's like, hey, I've been watching Gotham, I'd be happy to talk to them about it too. It's just one of those shows. Like, it's, you know, I'm happy it exists, but it's definitely not one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm very curious, since they announced Bruce is becoming Batman, how next season will go. Will it pick up with people watching it just because he's become Batman?
I think it will have a rating spike, but I think it'll be exactly that. I think it'll be a spike because it'll still be Gotham. I honestly don't trust the show enough to do something that interesting with it. They're very good at like getting you to watch, like, hey, we're introducing Scarecrow this time, and so you watch, and then it's like the lamest version of Scarecrow. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, they bank heavily on name power and are very frequently delivering underwhelming results. I have huge problems with their Poison Ivy. Just everything they've done with that character has been just downright skeevy in a lot of instances. But, you know, some of the stuff's been really cool. Like, Zazz, I thought, has been kind of really good. Penguin's obviously been fantastic. Riddler's pretty good most of the time. So there's some good stuff, and then there's some stuff that's not good. And it's just one of those things that's very much a mixed bag with that show.
All right, and for our final piece of DC news this week, we're going to end it on a sad note. Margaret Kidder from the original Superman movie and from Superman 2 passes away at 69.
Yeah, I was very disappointed to hear that. Very sad news.
Yeah.
Obviously extremely iconic in that role.
Oh, yeah, she was. And it's actually put me in the mood. If we weren't podcasting tonight, I'd probably be searching to watch Superman or Superman 2. great movies I've seen over and over quite a few times.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the most iconic scenes are largely due to her, like the where he saves her from falling.
Yeah. You saves know. Her from falling, and I don't know, I just love those movies.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We don't go in there. You don't want to go in there. There's a reason that chamber has no door.
What did she tell you? That it must have been a dream?
Rookie mistake, Doc!
Turn it up to 11 with Flask. Let's see what she's got. And smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
No, Doc, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
If you think that's impressive, wait until I get going. The answer's 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help.
Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, Season 3, coming soon.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, well, let's talk Detective Comics number 980. All right, well, this issue begins with the OMAX attacking the GCPD. And we see Batwoman is quick to confront Tim / OMAC Batman. And we kind of see Tim kind of shows her the future he's seen where she's going to be going after Batman.
Yeah, I mean, that it was, I think, a logical conclusion to what would be the potential future threat of Batwoman, because what's the most dangerous thing that she could do? It would be her using her knowledge of Batman against him. So that part made sense, but I mean, again, I don't know. This obsession with villainous Tim, I cannot understand why they can't let that concept go. Like, at this point, OMAC Tim is essentially the same as future grown-up Tim. You know what I mean? Like, they're essentially doing the exact same things, that they just look different. And I guess thematically that makes sense towards the end of this run, but, like, why not just reuse that villain? If that's really the road you want to go with that, why not just redo that? Why do essentially the same villain with a different skin?
Yeah. The problem I had with this was, instead of the OMAC program being in control of Tim, they were making it try to sound like it was actually Tim who was in control. And I just didn't buy that.
Yeah, and I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was OMAC, but he wasn't talking like OMAC. And that was reinforced by the scenes with Orphan and Spoiler interacting with Brother Eye. You know, then we actually saw, you know, the way he, with the eye spelling out, you know, EYE. We weren't getting that when Tim was talking. And so, like you said, that really kind of drives home the point that it's a villainous Tim again. And talking about the same future threats again.
I know. I can't wait for this story to be over with and for the new creative team to be on, because I'm ready for something different.
Yeah.
But we see Batman recruiting Orphan and Spoiler to kind of help against Tim. And we see them break into Ulysses' Belfry Point 2. Now, Ulysses tries to detour Stephanie by showing her future. And what happens is she's excited to learn that she's accepted into the Bat family. And she sees two different instances. One where she's Robin, which we knew was from pre-52, and Batgirl.
Well, they aren't features, I believe. I think they're supposed to be memories. They're supposed to be things that were supposed to have happened to her in the original time. Like, Ulysses essentially has access to events of that timeline, and he's showing her what her life should be and how the life that she currently has is essentially a failure to that. In a sense, his attempt is to break her down, be like, look, this is what you're supposed to be and look how terrible you are. And it instead has the effect of, like, so you're saying that I'm capable of doing these things, I'm awesome. And kind of, she's kind of motivated by that instead.
This is the first time in a long time we've seen a spark of hope of Spoiler having a happy ending.
I agree. But it also, I am glad, but it also doesn't make sense narratively, because her whole thing is that she's not satisfied with Batman's methods, and yet she's excited that in a different life she should have been Robin and she should have been Batgirl with the bat. Like, you know, she's excited that she was allowed to wear the emblem. And it's like, yes, in theory, that's awesome. But in practice, the story that you've written, the character that you've written, would not be excited by that. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, if you want to write this, in my opinion, terrible version of Spoiler, fine. But then you have to stick to it. You can't just magically go, oh, but now that she sees that she could be Robin, now she's all for it.
I don't know, but I'm happy that she's happy for once.
I agree. I just think that it was some poor writing to get to that point.
Now, my question for you is, do you think the writers are heading towards a happy ending with this? Are they setting up for the next creative team? What is your opinion on that?
Yes, I think they're going to tie up a number of loose ends. Of course, there's going to be some because they're going to tease whatever the next run is. But I think they're going to tie up a lot and have a sort of reconciliation. And to me, frankly, I don't think it's going to feel very earned, in my opinion. Like I said, like even for me, for Spoiler, it did not feel earned whatsoever to me. So I don't have high expectations for the rest of the team.
I'm just glad this is heading towards a wrap up.
Yeah. The best thing, the best thing that can happen is that it's going to basically reset the team, you know, and let somebody else do stuff. In that regard, that's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League No Justice number 1. All right, Cletus. Now that I've read this, I have to say, this event is a breath of fresh air compared to the disaster that Dark Knight's Metal was.
The story makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the biggest improvement. It's a clear, you know, logical storytelling. It was much better. Also, I mean, I shouldn't say the art was an improvement, because the artwork was fantastic for Metal, regardless of what I thought of the story. But, I mean, Manipul, personally for me, is one of my favorite artists, so him being the art for this was just even better.
All right. Well, I have to say that after reading this, I actually enjoyed it, and maybe that's because Snyder's other story was so confusing. I'm wondering, I think that Snyder wanted to tell his other story so confusing that when he wrote this one, we'd all be happy about it.
I think that Snyder was clearly trying to do his best Morrison impression, because there is so much. I mean, there's clear homages to Morrison stuff, like the map of the multiverse, the fact that Morrison helped co-write one of the tie-in issues. It's very much trying to do one of those Morrison metafictional things, and it's not something he's quite as good at as Morrison is. Like, that's Morrison's thing. Like, that's his writing. And Snyder is a very good writer, and that's something I would mention when we were talking about Metal, and it just didn't really show itself as much in Metal, at least for me and you. But this, I thought, was more representative of what he's usually like. Like, he's normally a very good writer. Like, I definitely look forward to reading stuff that Snyder puts out.
When they announced this project, I wasn't that excited about it, but after the reading the first issue, I was happy that it was good.
Yeah.
So we have Brainiac come to Earth to collect heroes and villains to fight for his planet against the Omega Titans, these beings from beyond the Source Wall. And we get to learn an old story about these Titans seeding their energy among the planets to see which of them was the greatest in creating life. And with the Source Wall being gone, I guess they've kind of been drawn back to harvest the energy by eating or destroying these planets. And the first thing that popped into my head when I was reading this was, this must be DC's version of Galactus, except they have four of them.
Yeah, it also reminded me a little bit of the Eternals from Marvel as well.
So I thought it was an interesting concept.
I love all of the characters that are involved. I love the wide selection that he's incorporated. The fact that they're finally reintegrating Martian Manhunter into the Justice League is like a decade overdue. And then just some of the other ones, like Starro is so, it like, that's such a fun inclusion. Sinestro, obviously, I'm very excited to see. Yeah, I think there's the potential for a really, really cool story here.
I do too. I wasn't that thrilled about these team ups until we found out the reason why and why they put these different teams together. It made sense, and yeah. I guess that's what I needed to see for me to get excited about the story. Now, one of the things that surprised me in the story was the ending. So we see Amanda Waller trying to use psychics to hack into Brainiac's brain. What happens is they end up destroying him. And he's supposed to be, when he was collecting these heroes and villains, he wasn't, you know, he kind of did it in a villainous way, but not trying to be a villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he had good intentions. If he would have went and asked, he would have had a harder time trying to get them to come out.
Oh, yeah, they'd have completely ignored him.
Right. So he went about it the way he could. But at the end of this issue, Amanda Waller and his team of psychics is trying to hack Brainiac's brain, and they ended up destroying Brainiac. So now they have no leadership for these teams.
Luckily, they have a few natural leaders there. So.
Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty interesting twist.
I agree. I mean, it wasn't something that was necessarily like super shocking, but it was still a great like ending of a first issue. Like, okay, here's the conceit, and then here's the sort of wrench that gets thrown into that. It's the perfect first issue. There was enough stuff that you have a clear idea of what the title's going to be about, and enough intrigue to like, okay, where's this going to go next?
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Flash number 46. Now, in this issue, we get a quick overview of Hunter Zolomon's backstory and how Eobard Thawn and he become partners. And one of the things we learn about Hunter Zolomon is he wants to make Wally a better hero.
Which is nothing new for him.
So, we find out that Hunter Zolomon has been hiding out in the future, protected from the timeline changes. So, we have a pre-52 Hunter Zolomon who didn't change because he was apparently in the future. So when Rebirth, or when the new 52 happened and Rebirth happened, he wasn't changed by it. So he knows what's going on.
I'm honestly, one of my biggest takeaways from this issue is like, I felt cheated that we didn't get a couple of Reverse Flash Zoom team up issues. I would have loved to have read that.
That would have been cool.
Especially if you're going to, like, Flash War, that would be perfect. Like, if you're, instead of being Barry versus Wally, have it be Barry and Wally versus Zoom and Reverse Flash. Like, come on.
That would have been awesome.
Well, that's way better. I'm just saying.
Hunter Zolomon's in the future. Eobard Thawn gets tired of waiting on whatever plan he's trying to hatch and goes off. And then, you know, we see the Eobard Thawn that we've seen in Rebirth. Going back to the heroes, we have Wally who's trying to process these new memories he just received last issue when he met with Iris. And we see different heroes coming in to try to help him sort through these memories. We see Zatanna, we see Martian Manhunter, and we even see Jessica Cruz. That was kind of interesting. They were little short scenes.
Yeah, that was nice. I still remain confused because like we talked about last issue, I was not aware that he didn't have all of his memories to begin with.
I wonder if they're kind of back writing that story. You know what I mean?
Why? Like, it's not that long ago.
I don't know, because
it's the same writer.
I don't know. But it seemed that's like what they were doing, because they never mentioned him not having his full memories that I remember.
That's weird. I still don't fully get that.
Now we see Barry go to the Batcave, and I was surprised he's trying to find Booster Gold.
I was trying to figure out. He says that the Justice League thing showed that Booster Gold was with Batman, which made me wonder, are they referencing the current Batman story?
I was wondering that too.
That must be it, but that doesn't totally make sense because that's in an alternate timeline.
I know. Unless this story takes place after it and Batman and Booster Gold have come back from it. The right, alternate yeah. timeline. That's the only thing I could think of.
Either way, Booster's hanging out with Batman. That's cool. So,
yeah.
I enjoyed that little line.
I figured you would. So we end up getting a scene where Wally is remembering the Flash Museum, and he tells Barry, when Barry comes there and the Flash Museum's not there anymore, tells him he just wants to run. And Barry's like, yeah, we can do that.
I'm still not seeing where these two are supposed to come into conflict. I know that that's what the conceit of the story is, but like every time they sort of set it up in some way, they basically undo it, which is fine because those two shouldn't fight. But it's just like, okay, at a certain point, you have to make something believable for the conflict, and you keep passing up potential opportunities.
I do not know where the story's going. I don't know what Hunter Zolomon's plan is. And I agree with you, there's really no conflict between the two, so I'm wondering when it's going to show up. And now I'm wondering, is Eobard Thawne going to show up?
I hope so. I would very much like to see that.
I hope so, too. It'd be a shame for him to be introduced in this first issue and not come back. So I'm intrigued, but I do not know where the story's going. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Batman White Knight number 8, the final issue. And it was packed with action.
I found this to be a very satisfying last issue. I don't know about you, but like, I felt like it very adequately wrapped up all of the major storylines. Like, I didn't feel like I got cheated out of something or there was like a thread that they didn't really tie up.
I thought it wrapped up really good myself. It was a better wrap up than the recent Nightwing, The New Order,
I agree completely. I mean, the Nightwing one was okay, but it was kind of a shame that it was just kind of okay because the rest of it had been so good. Whereas as this, I thought it was right in line quality-wise with the rest of the series. It was just very satisfying. Like, I was... The conclusions that they gave the characters, the letter from Alfred, I thought was amazing. The sort of... The Joker ending was great. The Harley Quinn twist was awesome. Like, there was just everything about it. I was like, I really like all of this.
Yeah, it was really good. We got to see Jack and Harley get married, and... what was weird was he was changing back into the Joker as they were getting married.
Yep, so she, in a sense, she married the Joker, which of course is Jack. So yeah. I thought it was very symbolic because in a sense she sort of is marrying both, and she literally did marry both. The Harley Quinn thing, we talked about last issue, there seemed to be a suggestion that Harley Quinn was up to more than we realized. And we got what I consider to be a very satisfying answer to that, where she sort of orchestrated the whole thing to a certain extent, not for some evil villainous purpose, but to more like show Gotham and show Bruce what Jack was capable of when he wasn't the Joker.
Yeah.
And also, like she said, the two of them were just going to be in a permanent stalemate, which of course in the normal comics they basically are. And so this was her way to like end the stalemate essentially. Yeah. I mean, just really good stuff.
Yeah. So some of the other small details that we haven't mentioned yet, we see Harley and Duke work together to build a better backport, including building a new library.
Yep.
You mentioned the letter from Alfred. That was really good. I like the fact that Bruce read it with Dick and Barbara.
Yeah, and that Alfred knew that he would be reading it with Dick and Barbara. I mean, just that letter was very good.
Another thing I thought was cool is we found out Nora was alive. And she was actually helping with the relief efforts for Gotham.
Yeah, that was great. And then the thing I enjoyed the most, I think, in a sense, was the sort of promise of a sequel or the potential for a sequel. That's pretty cool. I would very much be all over that if he decides to pursue a second story in this world that he's built. Because we get the tease that maybe Jack Napier is not gone permanently. And then we get that sort of cliffhanger that Bruce and Commissioner Gordon finally know the secret. That could be good. I kind of hope that they do a second one. I think the sales were strong enough. I think that DC would go for it if he wants to do another one.
Yeah. And then when Batman reveals his secret identity at the end, I wasn't expecting that at all.
No, but I thought it was fitting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was very surprising, but at the same time, it's like a logical twist. It was like, oh yes, that with the theme of this story and taking responsibility and, like, you know, recognizing that things need to change. That was it, and it was like, yeah, and it was. If anything, I thought the final issue made the rest of the series just a little bit better. Like, I already enjoyed it a lot, but it was such a good conclusion. It like raised my opinion of the series overall.
Yeah, it wrapped everything up real nice.
I highly recommend this. If people have been waiting to read this in the trade, when the trade comes out for this, I cannot recommend it enough. It is, if you enjoy sort of Elseworld-esque Batman stories, you've got to be all over this one. It is very good.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Welcome to the Soul Forge, a place of silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem. Join your host, Sean Vanderloo, as he guides you through the adventures of living. Together, we'll talk about life and love, sex and dating, joy and heartache, memories and loss, and so much more. Don't worry, it's not nearly as pretentious as it sounds. Get ready for life, the universe, and everything on the Soul Forge.
SoulForgePodcast.com.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl Season 3, Episode 17, Trinity. So, this episode opens up with the DEO questioning Lena about Sam from the events of last week. While that's going on, we see rain, purity, and pestilence begin a ritual to cause a darkness over the Earth, namely a solar eclipse. So, we start seeing this ritual briefly affects Supergirl, where she kind of has a what do you want to say, like a blackout thing where she sees the alternate dimension. So we get Supergirl decides she is going to find Sam in the alternate dimension via the Brainiac telepathy powers, and Lena and Alex end up going with her. And they're able to get Sam back into her normal body long enough to alert them to where Rain's fortress was. I thought this was a good episode.
I thought it was very good. I also thought that when they were trapped in the alternate dimension, the two women that were trapped there, I thought they delivered just a fantastic performance of the horror of being there and being confronted with these crimes that they didn't really commit, but they kind of did because it's their body. And also just the terror of being taken over like that, just everything. I thought they encapsulated that terror really well. I also like the touch of, we know that the third one was basically very content to be this evil Kryptonian thing. And like when they say you need to basically become your alternate self, she just gives herself up immediately. She's like, okay. And just passes herself over. I thought that was very fitting to that character.
Yeah, that was fitting for that character. And then, you know, we get that awesome showdown between the three world killers and what I'm calling Team Supergirl. So we have Supergirl, Martian Manhunter, Mon-El, Saturn Girl, and Alex. And it was pretty cool.
It was a pretty good fight. And I like that the world killers essentially beat them because, like, they should. Power-wise, they should beat them. But then they were sort of undone by themselves, by the heroics of I'm blanking on Sam and what was the other gal's name?
I can't remember her name either.
But the human persona for the other world killer.
Yes.
Those two basically saved the day, and that was awesome. I thought that was such a cool heroic ending. I was a little surprised that they actually killed off the other two world killers this soon. I'm not necessarily upset about it, though, because I like that it keeps the focus on specifically Rain as the villain. And really cranks up the threat. Like, she's already incredibly threatening as a villain.
Right.
And now she's three times as strong.
Yeah.
I really like that creative decision. Although I will say, I was surprised at how nonchalant the rest of the team was I don't know if they fully appreciated the fact that Rain absorbed the other two's powers. Because they're like, yeah, we did it. We got rid of two of them. And the Legion was even like, yeah, we can go back now. And I was like, should you though?
Yeah.
I don't really think the threat is over. Also, I don't totally believe that you should think that the threat is over either.
And my the one thing I was wondering is, have they changed time, or was Rain, since he has pestilence power, maybe she was behind what happens in the future?
Yeah, I agree completely. That was exactly my thought as well. It's like, are we sure she's not the one that becomes the blight? You know what I mean? It's like, we know that she evolves into something else. Wouldn't this be the one of the logical steps for that? So yeah, who knows? But of course the Legion's going to stick around too. I'm not saying that of course they will, but I was just surprised at how nonchalant the team was about that. It's like, I feel like that, like, it was definitely a win for sure, but not enough to be like, yeah, guys.
All right. Well, let's talk about Alex getting an upgrade.
Very cool.
Yeah. Wynn gives her a new suit and a weapon, and I think that's kind of fitting for her, because these world killers are way too powerful for regular Alex to take on. But giving her a new suit and a weapon that can handle trying to take them out gives her a step up to kind of keep her in the story.
It just makes sense for her in general. I mean, really, when they're taking on any threat, like Supergirl, the threats that Supergirl takes on are not threats that humans can take on. You know what I mean? So I thought it was just like, yes, this makes sense. It's the same thing. Like, you had to give James a very, fantastical suit, because otherwise he's James Olsen.
Yeah.
You know? So I liked it a lot, because I thought it helped. Obviously, of course, Alex is a badass, and of course she is an extremely adept fighter, but she's still essentially just a woman with a gun. And that's hard to go up against, superpowered aliens. So I like the suit a lot.
Yeah, I did too. All right, and let's get to the final thing I want to talk about in this episode, and that's Lena and James. Were you surprised that James came clean about Supergirl asking him to check up on Lena?
No, I was not. I kind of, as soon as he decided not to go into the vault, that's kind of where I thought it was going to go. I definitely don't think that... I liked the tension between Lena and Supergirl in this, because I do not think it's over. Especially when... So they sort of make peace, but then when James inadvertently is like, I went to go to your bunker because Supergirl asked me to, she did not like that. Like, she did not react positively to that. They kind of moved on quickly because they start talking about other things, and she admits that she's making kryptonite.
Yeah. So one of the things she told Supergirl is from Lex's stash, but then we find out when she's talking to James and they're telling the truth to each other, she tells him that she manufactured it. So, interesting twist. My gut tells me this is the beginning here of Lena going bad.
I agree completely, and I like it a lot. I think they're telling that story really well.
Yeah, it's been a slow build, and I like where it's going. I could see Lena as the villain of next season.
Yeah.
So that's where it feels like they're heading towards for me. And if they do it right, it'll be a nice slow build.
I think she could potentially be a villain in a similar vein to Slade, where he is a threat for a season, but ultimately they're able to sort of make peace, similar also to Anatoly, also on Arrow.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of potential for her in that vein, where she's sort of definitely clearly a bad guy for a long stretch of time, but not necessarily irredeemable either.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 4, Episode 21, Harry and the Harrisons.
So I definitely enjoyed this episode, but I was also a little surprised at how much of a filler it felt like at episode 21.
Yes, it was a great episode, but it was definitely a filler. So this week, Team Flash was primarily concerned with two problems. One, figuring out why DeVoe hadn't activated his satellites yet. And two, finding an organic, non-tech way of destroying the satellites because DeVoe has Kilgore's powers. So, Caitlin comes up with the idea of asking Amulet Black to help them. But the thing about that is, Caitlin has the ulterior motive because Amulet Black has a splicer thingamajigger that helped her control Killer Frost before, and she wants to use it again to bring Killer Frost back.
Amulet Black is a fine character for me, but honestly, it's at the point where anytime she shows up, it's almost guaranteed to be a filler episode. The only one I can think of that was a very significant episode in the season was the Prison Break one. And in that, she's such a minor character. But any other one where she's factored heavily in it has been one that's not been as consequential to the overall story.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I don't necessarily mean that as a complaint of her for her character, but it's just sort of like a signifier to me. Like, if I see her, I kind of know what kind of episode I'm getting.
Now, one of the things I thought was funny was when Amulet Black basically tells Barry, "You can take off your mask. I know who you are."
It makes sense. Like, it's kind of duh.
Yeah, I'm glad they addressed that because it makes perfect sense that she'd know who the Flash was.
It makes sense. Also, I find it a little unbelievable that she wouldn't do something with that knowledge.
Yeah, because that would seem like something her character would do.
Yeah, not like go to the press or anything, of course, but
no.
To use that, like, blackmail. Like, of course she would do that.
She would
see the opportunity there. Maybe she's afraid enough of the Flash not to do that, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe that's a possibility. He has foiled her a couple times this season.
I still think it's bizarre to me that they continue to make her carrying around a bag a central part of her. It's so dumb. It is. I can't get over how stupid that is. She's literally carrying essentially a purse filled with metal. Like, that is so wildly inconvenient and so easy to essentially to disable her. Like, you'd steal her purse. She's done. It's bizarre. It's such a bizarre decision to me that I can't get over that they're like, yes, this makes sense.
All right, well, let's go to the Council of Harrisons. Not really necessary to the story, but it was funny and it was silly.
It was great. I was thrilled that we got new versions of Harry because that was, as much as I loved the first one, when they ended that, I was like, oh man, I could have gone for even more impersonations. So I was so happy that they brought more back in. It was like, yes. I would love for them to keep doing that, basically just letting that guy just go nuts, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a good running gag, kind of like the Kite Man thing in the Batman title.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I loved it. It was so good. And if they want to do a different council next time, I'm all for it. I am all for those.
Another thing we got in this episode, we got a cool fight scene with Barry getting venomed and having to phase through it. Caitlin creating that giant icicle with the gun. Amulet Black creating that iron mask. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. Like I said, it was one of those things. It's not the episode I would expect for number 21, but it was very nice. It was a good episode.
Yeah, because this episode didn't really move the story along.
At all.
Yeah.
Really not at all.
Because we didn't see DeVoe at all. We didn't see Marlise. We didn't see the mystery girl.
Really, the only thing of significance is that they figure out that DeVoe's wife has left him, and that's why they haven't activated anything yet. But, like, that's something you could do in 2 minutes.
Yeah. And then the only other thing that came out of this episode is now they have a weapon that can destroy satellites.
Yep.
So I'm looking for. We only got 2 episodes left of The Flash, and I'm sure you saw the previews for the ones coming up, because they've been heavily advertising.
Yeah.
Advertising it. So we know the story is going to be moving forward in the next one.
Of course, I mean, yeah, it should.
Yeah. So DeVoe's supposed to be activating his satellites. It's going to be really interesting because we know Team Flash is going to try to stop it, and they're going to fail.
The thing I am most nervous about, in a sense, is I'm crossing my fingers so hard that Ralph comes back. I'm not sure that he's going to. If you had to make me bet, I would say that he's probably not. But man, I want him to come back so bad.
Yeah, my gut's telling me he's gone now too. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. All right, well, let's move on to our final episode for this week. Arrow, Season 6, Episode 22, The Ties That Bind. So, in this episode, we have Diaz target the former Team Arrow and their families.
This, I thought, was the second consecutive episode that did such a fantastic job of really demonstrating how thoroughly Diaz has taken control of the city. I mean, like, and how much into a corner he has backed Team Arrow. I mean, like, they really have so few options. They've really, I thought, have ramped up the Diaz threat very well, and have really, and in a sense, in my opinion, have really saved the season with these last handful of episodes. I think really rescued what potentially could have been a very thud ending of the season.
Yeah, we really saw the threat of Diaz in this, you know, coming after everyone in their homes. I like how they showed everybody's little moments in this and how everybody getting attacked affected everybody and how they had to come together despite all their differences from this season, whether we liked it or not.
I had to chuckle a little bit because, of course, they found time to throw in a little Felicity Oliver drama. Like, wouldn't be Arrow if we didn't have that.
Yeah. The thing that's getting old is the... I understand Oliver wanting to keep Felicity safe, but it's getting old.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that. Now, I loved the fact that they showed John and Lila and how well they get along in this situation. And I'm hoping this is one of the last episodes we get with this Oliver protecting Felicity thing going on. I'm hoping they grow from it finally.
You would think, but I'm pretty sure we've covered this ground before with them, so who knows? Hopefully, we're almost to season 7 now. Like, at a certain point, can we just have them be a healthy couple?
Yeah, no kidding.
Is that too much to ask?
Maybe Oliver should take some time out and either train Felicity or have Felicity train with Lila or Diggle or somebody just to up her fighting skills.
I will say my one complaint when they do these things is that it's almost always Oliver in the wrong. And, like, I agree that he needs to accept that she's going to be in danger, that that's part of the job. But also, she needs to acknowledge that that was extremely reckless of her to do.
It was very reckless of her.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't think it was too much for her character to be like, yeah, it was very dangerous for me to do that, but it did work. So, like, that's a fair point. Yes, it worked, so it's good. But also, maybe I shouldn't do that next time because I very seriously could have gotten killed.
And she almost did. She was lucky Oliver was there to save her.
Yeah, so, like, both sides definitely have a fair point, don't get me wrong, but I always feel like the show always tends to weigh Felicity's opinion heavier than Oliver's. Like, she's almost, you know what I mean? Like, she's always more right than he is. And I feel like oftentimes they have a 50-50 argument, so I'd rather them, you know, sort of be like they're, you know, both equally right and wrong instead of Oliver being completely wrong.
All right, now I need to bring up something I had an issue with, and that was Argus's ability. It seemed in this issue they had to make an excuse for Argus not to be able to interfere with Diaz because of some policy. I found that kind of lame.
I find that hard to believe that the organization that Amanda Waller ran with the Suicide Squad would have legal qualms with taking Diaz down.
Yeah, it felt like they are trying to create a situation where they couldn't help out, and it just felt false.
Well, they did though, but they weren't able to help. They were able to help indirectly. Like, they were able to, like, be there, but they couldn't be the ones taking the action themselves. Because we definitely saw Argus agents.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting. So, yeah, it was weird. I thought that they balanced it fairly well, but I agree. It was still obviously very convenient.
Yeah.
For them not to be able to do much.
All right. Well, let's get to the last thing in this episode. And the one that kind of shocked me the most. We see Oliver going to Agent Watson's office, ask for her help, not only ask for her help, but admit that he's the Green Arrow.
I was very surprised, and I'm not going to lie, the main reason I was surprised was because I thought that actress was just off the show. I thought the reason that we hadn't seen her was because she had found something else and that they had to write her character out.
Yeah, we had talked about this really recently, and yeah, it might have been last episode. But
I've mentioned it a couple times on the podcast. It was the thing. This is not based on any knowledge. It was just like I just assumed that was the reason why she just was a complete no-show for the second half of the season.
Now she said they would help Oliver on two conditions. One, she wanted him to admit that he was the Green Arrow, which he did. The second one they didn't reveal. And something tells me that's going to be the big twist or whatever that we're going to find out about in the season finale.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm very curious to see what it is.
I am too. We both thought before that it was going to be him announcing publicly that he's the Green Arrow. But something tells me that's not it now. Is she going to make him retire?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Because they said it was sort of an irrevocable change, and if you do that, then who's going to want to watch season 7?
I know, that's the thing. The other thing I'm wondering, are they going to make Oliver go to prison? I mean, the episode's called Life Sentence.
That could make more sense, but I feel like Oliver would not agree to that.
I know.
His whole thing, this whole time, he's been fighting against that. I can't imagine that he'd be like, okay, now I'll do it.
So, I'm just curious what her second condition is.
Oh, no, I think that's a very real possibility. I don't know that I can see him accepting that. We'll see. I don't know. I was very intrigued by that. I also just, they have done a very good job, like I said, of ramping the end of this season up. And, like, I am very much invested again in what's going on.
Question for you. One thing Oliver could have done instead of going to Agent Watson, he could have gone to Barry. I know Barry's kind of busy with his own thing going on, but he's still the fastest man alive.
Yeah.
And not only could he have gone to Barry, they could have brought in Supergirl too. I mean, I think he could have found another way besides going to the FBI by bringing together a team of heroes to help him take down Diaz.
Right, but I mean, essentially, theoretically, every episode of Arrow could be solved by simply calling Supergirl over.
Or the Flash. Yeah, I know, but you know
especially
what I mean?
Especially Supergirl, though. Like, Supergirl literally could solve every single Arrow episode in, like, a matter of minutes. And just so then, but then what would be the point of the show? So, I agree. Like, you're definitely not wrong, but at the same time, then what's the point of the show?
One of the things we talked about a while back was Arrow ending an episode a week before the Flash. Do you see maybe anything coming out of Arrow that's going to affect the Flash show of why they had to end Arrow early?
I'm not sure which one of them is definitely going to affect the other, and I'm not sure if it's Flash or Arrow. I think we talked about this. I think we kind of thought that it would be Flash, because Arrow, like, if Arrow was the one, I don't know, because you could go either way. Because if you're going to have Flash affect Arrow, Flash has to air last, because during the week it airs first, so you couldn't have their finales be on the same week. Whereas if Arrow was the one affecting Flash, you would think that Arrow would end last because you would want Flash to end its season first and then have the big game changer.
I'm still curious about that.
I don't know. And my logic could be wrong. That's just what I'm like, you know, trying to connect the dots. I feel my guess is that it's Flash. I think Flash is the one that's going to affect Arrow. But I'm not saying that with any confidence whatsoever. It's like a coin flip, and that's what I'm guessing. I think Flash is the one that's causing the game changer.
So it'll be interesting to find out. We got Flash tomorrow night, and I'm very excited about watching it and watching Arrow season finale this week too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm working at the bookstore Thursday night, so I'm going to have to watch it Friday morning and stay off the internet because I know it's going to be full of spoilers.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the same boat as you because I'm actually going to be seeing Deadpool on Thursday night. So.
Oh, are you?
I'm betraying the team a little bit, but.
Oh, that's going to be a fun movie to go see. Yeah. So I don't blame you there. I don't know when I'm going to see Deadpool, but it'll probably be sooner than later.
But I got to say, like I said, I got to give Arrow, the writing team, a lot of credit. They have seriously turned the season around because it was bad. In my opinion, it had the worst episode of Arrow ever this season. So to be able to recover from that has been impressive.
Yeah, and they've been coming towards a great ending. So looking forward to seeing it this week. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, my shout-out for this week has got to be the show Lucifer. I've talked about it before, and since it's been canceled, I highly recommend you go back. It's on Hulu. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or not. It's definitely on Hulu, all three seasons. Just go check it out. I mean, it's not one of those ones that you need to necessarily watch the whole thing. I did. I got hooked into it, but... Even if you watch just one, there are just some. It's a great procedural show, so you can just kind of pop into kind of whatever episode and just enjoy the show, enjoy the characters that they've kind of built out. One of the cops played Brother Blood on Arrow back in season two. He's kind of a goofy guy on that show, so that's kind of funny. But yeah, just check it out. I really enjoyed the show, and I'm disappointed to see it go, but it was a very good show nonetheless, at least for me.
All right, and I'm going to shout out about Batman Nightwalker. It is a teen fiction book where young Bruce Wayne is coming of age, and he turns 18 and gets his fortune. He gets involved trying to stop this criminal, wrecks his car, and gets community service for interfering with police business, and ends up at Arkham Asylum, where he meets this girl that's part of this group called the Nightwalkers. And it's a very interesting tale. It's basically a different take on Batman's origin that we haven't seen. That it's before he becomes Batman. It's a pretty good story. I really suggest checking that out. All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or... you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, next week we have Batman number 47. We're getting closer to that wedding.
And more Booster.
We have Justice League, No Justice number 2. The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman number 4. And, of course, the CW shows. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store. which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.